Have you ever been traveling overseas, logged into your favorite streaming service, and realized your favorite show isn't there? Different countries have different streaming rights, so just because you can watch Breaking Bad at home doesn't mean you can watch it overseas. Well, with Surfshark, you can. Surfshark is the VPN that I use every single day. I simply choose from one of their 3,200 plus servers in 100 countries and get back to watching the favorite shows that I love. Use the link in the description or the episode notes to get Surfshark VPN today for as little as $2.30 per month on a 2-year plan, and get back to watching the shows that you love.
Did you know that whenever you use a website, you give them permission to track what you do online? If you keep the tab open, they can see what you do and create a digital footprint of you. Well, with Surfshark Antivirus, not only will you never have to worry about downloading any risky files, but all of your web browsing will be protected, guaranteeing that you can search freely without leaving any digital footprint, and guaranteeing that you can't be tracked online. If you feel like your online protection should be better, use the link in the description and episode notes to get 76% off Surfshark Antivirus today, and feel safe every day on your devices.
Hello, and welcome to the Essential Reads podcast. I'm Isaac, and my goal is to bring to you a bunch of audiobooks from your favourite classic authors such as Orson Welles, Robert Louis Stevenson, John Steinbeck, and many more. Come join me on this journey to help get these books to the masses in an easy, accessible way. Let's start.
The Grapes of Wrath by John Steinbeck. Chapter 6. The Reverend Casey and young Tom stood on the hill and looked down on the Jode Place. The small, unpainted house was mashed at one corner, and it had been pushed off its foundations so that it slumped at an angle. Its blind front windows pointing at a spot in the sky well above the horizon. The fences were gone, and the cotton grew in the dooryard and up against the house. And the cotton was about the shed barn. The outhouse lay on its side, and the cotton grew close against it. Where the dooryard had been pounded hard by bare feet of children and by stamping horses' hooves and by the board wagon wheels, it was cultivated now, and the dark green, dusty cotton grew. Young Tom stared for a long time at the ragged willow beside the dry horse's trough, at the concrete base where the pump had been.
"Jesus," he said at last. "Hell must have popped here. There ain't nobody living there."
At last, he moved quickly down the hill, and Casey followed him. He looked into the barn shed. Deserted. A little ground straw on the floor, and at the mule stall in the corner. And as he looked in, there was a skittering on the floor, and a family of mice faded under the straw. Jode paused at the entrance to the tool shed, leaned to, and no tools were there. A broken plough point, a mess of hay wire in the corner, an iron wheel from a hay rake, and a rat-gnawed mule collar, a flat-gallon oil can, crusted with dirt and oil, and a pair of torn overalls hanging on a nail.
"There ain't nothing left," said Jode. "We had pretty nice tools." "There ain't nothing left," Casey said. "If I was still a preacher, I'd say the arm of the Lord had struck. But now I don't know what happened. I've been away. I didn't hear nothing."
They walked towards the concrete well cap, walked through the cotton plants to get to it, and the bowls were forming on the cotton, and the land was cultivated.
"We'd never planted here," Jode said. "We always kept this clear. Why, you can't get a horse in now without he tramps the cotton."
They paused at the dry watering trough. And the proper weeds that should grow under a trough were gone, and the old thick wood of the trough was dry and cracked. On the well cap, the bolts that had held the pump stuck up, their threads rusty and the nuts gone. Jode looked into the tube of the well and spat and listened. He dropped a clod down the well and listened.
"She was a good well," he said. "I can't hear water."
He seemed reluctant to go to the house. He dropped clod after clod down the well.
Maybe they're all dead, he said. But somebody had told me. I'd got word some way. Maybe they left a letter or something to tell in the house. Would they have known you was coming out? I don't know, said Jude. No, I guess not. I didn't know myself till a week ago. Let's look in the house. She's all pushed out of shape. Something's knocked the hell out of her. They walked slowly towards the sagging house. Two of the supports of the porch roof were pushed out so that the roof flopped down on one end, and the house corner was crushed in. Through a maze of splintered wood, the room at the corner was visible. The front door hung open inward, and a low, strong gate across the front door hung outward on leather hinges. Jode stopped at the step, a 12x12 timber. Doorsteps here, he said. But they gone. Or Ma's dead. He pointed to the low gate across the front door. If Ma was anywhere about, that gate be shut and hooked. That's the one thing she always done. Seeing that gate was shut. His eyes were warm. Ever since the pig got in over to Jacob's and ate the baby. Millie Jacobs was just out in the barn. She come in while the pig was eating it. Well, Millie Jacobs was in a family way, and she went raving. Never did get over it. Touched ever since. But Ma took a lesson from it. She never left that pig gate open, lest she was in the house, herself. Never did forget. No, they gone. Or dead. He climbed to the split porch and looked into the kitchen. The windows were broken out, and throwing rocks lay on the floor. And the floor and the walls sagged steeply away from the door, and the sifted dust was stuck on the boards. Jode pointed to the broken glass and rocks. Kids, he said. They'll go 20 miles to bust a window. I'd done it myself. They know when a house is empty. They know. That's the first thing kids do when folks move out. The kitchen was empty of furniture, stove gone, and the round stovepipe hole in the wall showing light. On the sink shelf lay an old beer opener and a broken fork with its wooden handle gone. Jode slipped, cautiously, into the room, and the floor groaned under his weight. An old copy of the Philadelphia Ledger was on the floor against the wall, its pages yellow and curling. Jode looked into the bedroom. No bed, no chairs, nothing. On the wall, a picture of an Indian girl in colour, labelled Red Wing. A bed slat leaning against the wall, and in one corner, a woman's high-button shoe, curled up at the toe and broken over the instep. Jode picked it up and looked at it. I remember this, he said. This was Ma's, and it's all wore out now. Ma liked them shoes. Hadn't for years. No, they've went and took everything. The sun had lowered until it came through the angled end windows now, and it flashed on the edges of the broken glass. Jode turned at last and went out and crossed the porch. He sat down on the edge of it and rested his bare feet on the 12x12 step. The evening light was on the field, and the cotton plants threw long shadows on the ground, and the molting willow tree threw a long shadow. Casey sat down beside Jode. They ever wrote you nothing? He said. No, like I said, they wasn't people to write. Pa could write, but he wouldn't. Didn't like to. It give him the shivers to write. He could work out a catalog order as good as the next fella, but he wouldn't write no letters just for ducks. They sat, side by side, staring off into the distance. Jode laid his rolled coat on the porch beside him. His independent hands rolled a cigarette, smoothed it, and lighted it, and he inhaled deeply and blew the smoke out through his nose. Something wrong, he said. I can't put my fingers on her. I got an itch that something's wrong or in hell. Just this house, pushed round, and my folks gone. Casey said, right over there the ditch was where I'd done the baptizing. He wasn't mean, but he was tough. Hung on to that little girl's pigtail like a bulldog. We baptized you both in the name of the Holy Ghost, and you still hung on. Old Tom says, ho, I'm underwater. So I shove your head down till you stop bubbling before you let go of that pigtail. You wasn't mean, but you was tough. Sometimes a tough kid grows up with a big jaw spirit in him. A lean grey cat came sneaking out of the barn and crept through the cotton plants to the end of the porch. It leapt slightly up to the porch and crept low belly towards the men. It came to a place between and behind the two, and then it sat down, and its tail stretched out straight and flat to the floor. And the last inch of it flicked. The cat sat and looked off into the distance where the men were looking. Jode glanced around at it. By God, look who's here. Somebody stayed. He put out his hand, and the cat leaped away out of reach and sat down and licked the pad of its lifted paw. Jode looked at it, and his face was puzzled. I know what's the matter, he cried. That cat just made me figure what's wrong. Seems to me there's lots wrong, said Casey. No, it's more'n just this place. Why didn't the cat just move in with some neighbors, with the Rances? How come nobody ripped some lumber off this house? Ain't been nobody here for 3-4 months, and nobody stole no lumber. Nice plank on the barn shed. Plenty of good planks in the house. Wind of frames, and nobody's took 'em. That ain't right. That's what was bothering me. And I couldn't catch hold of her. Well, what's that figure out for you? Casey reached down and slipped off his sneakers and wriggled his long toes on the steps. I don't know. Seems like maybe there ain't any neighbors. If there was, would all them nice planks be here? Why, Jesus Christ, Albert Rance took his family and kids and dog all into Oklahoma City one Christmas. They was going to visit with Albert's cousins. Well, folks around here thought Albert moved away without saying nothing. Figured maybe he's got debts or some woman squaring off at him. When Albert come back a week later, there wasn't a thing left in his house. Stove was gone, bed's gone, winder frames gone, and 8 feet of planking was gone off the south side of the house, so you could look right through her. He came driving home just as Muley Graves was driving away with the doors and the well pump. Took Albert 2 weeks driving around the neighborhood before he got his stuff back. Casey scratched his toes luxuriously. Didn't nobody give him an argument? All of them just give the stuff up? Sure, they wasn't stealing it. They thought he left, and they just took it. He got all of it back. All but a sofa pillow, velvet, with a picture of an engine on it. Albert claimed Grandpa got it. Claimed Grandpa got engine blood. That's why he wants the picture. Well, Grandpa did get her, but he didn't give a damn about the picture on it. He just liked her. Used to pack her around, and he put her wherever he was going to sit. He never would give her back to Albert. Says, if Albert wants this pillow so bad, let him come and get her. But he better come shooting, because I'll blow his goddamn stinking head off if he comes messing around my pillow. So, finally, Albert give up and made Grandpa a present of that pillow. He give Grandpa ideas, though. He took to saving chicken feathers. Says he's going to have a whole damn bed of feathers. But he never got no feather bed. One time, Pa got mad at a skunk under the house. Pa slapped that skunk with a 2x4, and Ma burned all Grandpa's feathers so we could live in the house. He laughed. Grandpa's a tough old bastard. Just sat on that engine pillar and says, let Albert come and get her. Why, he says, I'll take that squint and wring it out like a pair of drawers. The cat crept closer between the men again, and its tail lay flat, and its whiskers jerked now and then. The sun dropped low toward the horizon, and the dusty air was red and golden. The cat reached out a grey, questioning paw and touched Joe's coat. He looked around. Hell, I forgot the turtle. I ain't gonna pack it all over hell. He unwrapped the land turtle and pushed it under the house. But in a moment, it was out, headed southwest, as it had been from the first.
The cat leapt at it and struck its straining head and slashed at its moving feet. The old, hard, humorous head was pulled in and the thick tail slapped under the shell. And when the cat grew tired of waiting for it and walked off, the turtle headed on southwest again. Young Tom Joad and the preacher watched the turtle go, waving its legs and boosting its heavy, high-domed shell along towards the southwest. The cat crept along behind it for a while, but in a dozen yards it arched its back to a strong, taut bow and yawned, and came stealthily back towards the seated men. "Where the hell you suppose he's gone?" said Joad. "I seen turtles all my life. They always gone someplace. They always seem to want to get there." The grey cat seated itself between and behind them again. It blinked slowly. The skin over its shoulders jerked forwards under a flea, and then slipped slowly back. The cat lifted a paw and inspected it, flicked its claws out and in again experimentally, and licked its pads with a shell pink tongue. The red sun touched the horizon and spread out like a jellyfish, and the sky above it seemed much brighter and more alive than it had been. Joad unrolled his new yellow shoes from his coat, and he brushed his dusty feet with his hands before slipping them on. The preacher, staring across the field, said, "Somebody's coming. Look, down there, right through the cotton." Joad looked where Casey's finger pointed. "Coming afoot?" he said. "Can't see him for the dust he rises. Who the hell's coming here?" They watched the figure approaching in the evening light, and the dust it raised was reddened by the setting sun. "Man," said Joad. The man drew closer, and as he walked past the barn, Joad said, "Why, I know him. You know him. That's Muley Graves." And he called, "Hey, Muley, how are you?"
The approaching man stopped, startled by the call, and then he came on quickly. He was a lean man, rather short. His movements were jerky and quick. He carried a gunny in his hand. His blue jeans were pale at knee and seat, and he wore an old black suit coat, stained and spotted, the sleeves torn loose from the shoulders and back, and ragged holes worn through at the elbows. His black hat was as stained as his coat, and the band, torn half free, flopped up and down as he walked. Muley's face was smooth and unwrinkled, but it wore the translucent look of a bad child's, the mouth held tight and small, the little eyes half scowling, half petulant.
"You remember Muley?" Joad said softly to the preacher.
"Who's that?"
the advancing man called. Joad did not answer. Muley came close, very close, before he made out the faces.
"Well, I'll be damned," he said. "It's Tommy Joad. When'd you get out, Tommy?"
2 days ago," said Joad. "Took a little time to hitchhike home. And look here what I find. Where's my folks, Muley? What's the house all smashed up for? And cotton planted in the dooryard?"
"By God, it's lucky I come by," said Muley. "'Cause old Tom worried himself. When they was fixing to move, I was sitting in the kitchen right there. I just told Tom I wasn't going to move, by God. I told him that, and Tom says, 'I'm moving myself about, Tommy. Suppose he comes home and there ain't nobody here. What'll he think?' I says. 'Why don't you write down a letter?' And Tom says, 'Maybe I will. I'll think about it. But if I don't, you keep your eye out for Tommy, if you're still around.' 'I'll be around,' I says. 'I'll be around till hell freezes over. There ain't nobody can run a guy named Graves out of this country. And they ain't done it, neither.'"
Joad said impatiently, "Where's my folks? Tell me about you standing up to them later. But where's my folks?"
"Well, they was gonna stick her out when the bank come to tractor in off the place. Your grandpa stood out here with a rifle, and he blowed the headlights off that cat. But she come on just the same. Your grandpa didn't want to kill the guy driving that cat. And that was Willie Freely. And Willie knowed it. So he just come on and bumped the hell out of the house. And give her a shake like a dog shakes a rat. Well, it took something out of Tom. kinda got into him. He ain't been the same ever since. Where's my folks?
Jode spoke angrily.
What I'm telling you, took 3 trips with your Uncle John's wagon. Took the stove and the pump and beds. You should have seen them beds go out with all them kids, and your grandma and grandpa sitting up against the headboards, and your brother Noah sitting there smoking a cigar and spitting la-dee-da over the side of the wagon.
Jode opened up his mouth to speak.
They're at your Uncle John's,
Muley said quickly. Oh, all at John's? Well, what they doing there?
Now stick to her for a second, Muley. Just stick to her. In just a minute, you can go on your own way.
What's they doing there?
Well, they've been chopping cotton. All of them. Even the kids and your grandpa. Getting money together so they can shove on west. Gonna buy a car and shove on west where it's easy living. There ain't nothing here. 50 cents a clear acre for chopping cotton. And folks begging for the chance to chop.
And they ain't gone yet?
No, said Muley. Not that I know. Last I heard was 4 days ago when I seen your brother Noah shooting jackrabbits, and he says they're aiming to go in about 2 weeks. John got his notice, he gotta get off. You just go on about 8 miles to John's place, you'll find your folks piled in John's house like gophers in a winter burrow.
Okay, said Jode. Now you can ride on your way. You ain't changed a bit, Muley. If you want to tell about something off northwest, you point your nose straight southeast, Muley said, translucently.
You ain't changed neither. You was a smart aleck kid, and you're still a smart aleck. You ain't telling me how to skin my life by any chance.
Jode grinned. No, I ain't. If you want to drive your head into a pile of broken glass, there ain't nobody can tell you different. You know this here preacher, don't you, Muley? Reverend Casey?
Why, sure. Didn't look over. Remember him well.
Casey stood up, and the 2 shook hands.
Glad to see you again, said Muley. You ain't been around for a hell of a long time.
I've been off asking questions, said Casey. What happened here? Why are they kicking folks off the land? Muley's mouth snapped shut so tightly that a little parrot's beak in the middle of his upper lip stood down over his underlip. He scowled.
Them sons of bitches, he said. Them dirty sons of bitches. I tell you, man, I'm staying. They ain't getting rid of me. If they throw me off, I'll come back. And if they figure I'll be quiet underground, why, I'll take a couple 3 of the sons of bitches along for company.
He patted a heavy weight in his side coat pocket.
I ain't a-going. My pa come here 50 years ago, and I ain't a-going.
Jode said, what's the idea of kicking the folks off?
Oh, they talked pretty about it. You know what kind of years we've been having? Dust coming up and spoiling everything, so a man didn't get enough crop to plug up an ant's ass. And everybody got bills at the grocery. You know how it is. Well, the folks that owns the land says we can't afford to keep no tenants. And they says the share a tenant gets is just the margin of a profit we can't afford to lose. And they says, if we put all of our land in one piece, we can just hardly make a pay. So they tracted all the tenants off the land. All except me, and by God, I ain't going. Tommy, you know me. You know me all your life.
Damn right, said Jode. All my life.
Well, you know I ain't a fool. I know this land ain't much good. Never was much good, except for grazing. Never should have broke her up. And now she's cotton damn near to death. If only they didn't tell me I gotta get off, why, I'd probably be in California right now, eating grapes and picking oranges when I wanted. But them sons of bitches says I got to get off, and Jesus Christ, a man can't do what he's told to.
Sure, Jode said. I wonder Pa went so easy. I wonder Grandpa didn't kill nobody. Nobody ever told Grandpa where to put his feet. And Ma ain't nobody you can push around neither. I seen her beat the hell out of a tin peddler with a live chicken one time because he gave her an argument. She had the chicken in one hand, an axe in the other, about to cut his head off. Shame to go for the peddler with an axe, but she forgot which hand was which, and she taxes after him with the chicken. Couldn't even eat that chicken when she got done. There wasn't nothing but a pair of legs in her hand. Grandpa throwed his hip out of joint laughing. How'd my folks go so easy? Well, the guy that come round talked nice as pie. You gotta get off. It ain't my fault. Well, I says, whose fault is it? And I go, I'll nut the fella. It's the Shawnee Land and Cattle Company. I just got orders. Who's the Shawnee Land and Cattle Company? It ain't nobody. It's a company. Got a fella crazy. There was nobody you could lay for. A lot of the folks just tied out looking for something to be mad at. But not me. I'm mad at all of it. I'm staying. A large red drop of sun lingered on the horizon, and then dripped over and was gone. And the sky was brilliant over the spot where it had gone, and a torn cloud like a bloody rag hung over the spot of its going. And the dusk crept over the sky from the eastern horizon, and darkness crept over the land from the east. The evening star flashed and glittered in the dusk. The grey cat sneaked away towards the open barn shed and passed inside like a shadow. Jode said, Well, we ain't gonna walk no 8 miles to Uncle John's place tonight. My dog's burned up. How's it if we go to your place, Muley? That's only about a mile.
Won't do no good.
Muley seemed embarrassed.
My wife and the kids and her brother all took and went to California. There wasn't nothing to eat. They wasn't as mad as me. So they went. There wasn't nothing to eat here.
The preacher stirred nervously. You should have went too. You shouldn't have broke up the family.
I couldn't, said Muley Graves. Something just wouldn't let me.
Well, by God, I'm hungry, said Jode. 4 solemn years I've been eating right on the minute. My guts is yelling bloody murder. What you gonna eat, Muley? How you been getting your dinner?
Muley said ashamedly, For a while, I ate frogs and squirrels and prairie dogs sometimes. I had to do it. But now I got some wire nooses on the tracks and in the dry stream brush. Get rabbits and sometimes a prairie chicken. Skunks get caught and coons too.
He reached down, picked up his sack, and emptied it onto the porch. 2 cottontails and a jackrabbit fell out and rolled over limply, soft and furry.
God almighty, said Jode. It's more than 4 years since I've ate fresh killed meat.
Casey picked up one of the cottontails and held it in his hand. You sharing with us, Muley Graves? He asked.
Muley fidgeted in embarrassment. I ain't got no choice in the matter.
He stopped on the ungracious sound of his words.
That ain't like I mean it. That ain't, I mean.
He stumbled.
What I mean, if a fella's got something to eat and another fella's hungry, why the first fella ain't got no choice. I mean, suppose I pick up my rabbits and go off somewhere and eat 'em, see?
I see, said Casey. I can see that. Muley sees something there, Tom. Muley's got a halt of something. That's too big for him. That's too big for me. Young Tom rubbed his hands together. Who's got a knife? Let's get at these miserable rodents. Let's get at 'em. Muley reached into his pant pocket and produced a large, horn-handled pocket knife. Tom Jode took it from him, opened the blade, and smelled it. He drove the blade again and again into the ground and smelled it again, wiped it on his trouser leg, and felt the edge with his thumb. Muley took a quart bottle of water out of his pip pocket and set it on the porch.
Go easy on that dear water, he said. That's all there is. This here well's filled in.
Tom took up a rabbit in his hand. One of you's got to get some bale wire out of the barn. We'll make a fire with some of this broken plank from the house. He looked at the dead rabbit. There ain't nothing so easy to get ready as a rabbit, he said. He lifted the skin off the back, slit it, put his fingers into the hole, and tore the skin off. It slipped off like a stocking, slipped off the body to the neck, and off the legs to the paws. Jode picked up the knife again and cut off the head and feet. He laid the skin down, slit the rabbit along the ribs, shook out the intestines onto the skin, and then threw the mess off into the cotton field. And the clean-muscled little body was ready.
Jode cut off the legs and cut the meaty paws into two pieces. He was picking up the second rabbit when Casey came back with a snarl of bale wire in his hand. "Now build up a fire and put some steaks up," said Jode. "Jesus Christ, I'm hungry for these creatures." He cleaned and cut up the rest of the rabbits and strung them on the wire. Muley and Casey tore splintered boards from the wrecked house corner and started a fire. And they drove a stake into the ground on each side to hold the wire. Muley came back to Jode.
"Look out for boils on that jackrabbit," he said. "I don't like to eat no jackrabbit with boils."
He took a little cloth bag from his pocket and put it on the porch. Jode said the jack was as clean as a whistle.
"By God, you got salt too? By any chance you got some plates and a tin in your pocket?"
He poured salt in his hand and sprinkled it over the pieces of rabbit strung on the wire. The fire leaped and threw shadows onto the house, and the dry wood crackled and snapped. The sky was almost dark now, and the stars were out sharply. The grey cat came out of the barn shed and trotted, meowing, towards the fire. But nearly there, it turned and went directly to one of the little piles of rabbit entrails on the ground. It chewed and swallowed, and the entrails hung from its mouth. Casey sat on the ground beside the fire, feeding it broken pieces of board, pushing the long boards in as the flames ate off their ends. The evening bats flashed into the firelight and out again. The cat crouched back, licked its lips, and washed its face and whiskers. Jode held up his rabbit-laden wire between his two hands and walked to the fire.
"Here, take one end, Muley. Wrap your end round that stake. That's good now. Let's tighten her up. We ought to wait here till the fire's burned down, but I can't wait."
He made the wire taut, then found a stick and slipped the pieces of meat along the wire until they were over the fire, and the flames licked up around the meat and hardened and glazed the surfaces. Jode sat down by the fire, but with his stick, he moved and turned the rabbits so that it would not become sealed to the wire.
"This here's a party," he said. "Salt, Muley's got, and water, and rabbits. I wish he got a pot of hominy in his pocket. That's all I wished."
Muley said over the fire,
"You fellas think I'm touched the way I live?"
"Touched nothing," said Jode. "If you're touched, I wished everybody was touched." Muley continued.
"Well, sir, it's a funny thing. Something went and happened to me when they told me I had to get off the place. First, I was going to go in and kill a whole flock of people. Then, all my folks just went away out west. And I got wandering around, just walking around. Never went far. Slept where I was. I was going to get sleep here tonight. That's why I come. I tell myself I'm looking after things, so when all the folks come back, it'll be all right. But I knowed that weren't true. And there ain't nothing to look after. Folks ain't never coming back. I'm just wandering around like a damn old graveyard ghost."
"Fella gets used to a place, it's hard to go," said Casey. "Fella gets used to a way of thinking. It's hard to leave. I ain't a preacher no more, but all the time I find I'm praying, not even thinking what I'm doing."
Jode turned the pieces of meat over on the wire. The juice was dripping now, and every drop, as it fell into the fire, shot up a spurt of flame. The smooth surface of the meat was crinkling up and turning faint brown.
"Smell her," said Jode. "Jesus, look down and just smell her."
Muley went on.
"Like a damn old graveyard ghost. I've been going round places where stuff happened. Like there's a place over by R40. In a gully there's a bush. First time I ever lay with a girl was there. Me, 14, stamping and jerking, and snorting like a buck deer, randy as a billy goat. So I went there, laid down on the ground, and I seen it all happen again. There's a place down by the barn where Pa got gored to death by a bull, and his blood is right in that ground right now. Must be. Nobody's ever washed it out, and I put my hand on the ground. Where my Pa's blood is part of it."
He paused uneasily.
"You fellas think I'm touched?"
Jode turned the meat, and his eyes were inward. Casey, feet drawn up, stared into the fire. 15 feet back from the men, the fed cat was sitting, the long grey tail wrapped neatly round the front feet. A big owl shrieked as it went overhead, and the firelight showed its white underside and the spread of its wings. "Now," said Casey, "you're lonely, but you ain't touched." Muley's tight face was rigid.
"I put my hand right on the ground where that blood is still, and I seen my pa with a hole through his chest, and I feel him shiver up against me like he done, and I seen him kind of settle back and reach with his hand and his feet. And I seen his eyes all milky with hurt. And then he was still, and his eyes so clear looking up. And me, a little kid, sitting there, not crying, no nothing, just sitting there."
He shook his head sharply. Jode turned the meat over and over.
"And I went in the room where Joe was born. Bed wasn't there, but it was the room. And all them things is true. And they're right in the place they happen. Joe come to life right there. He gave a big old gasp and then let out a squawk you could hear a mile. And his grandma standing there says, 'That's a daisy. That's a daisy,' over and over. And her so proud she bust 3 cups that night."
Jode cleared his throat. "I think we better eat now."
"Let it good and done. Good and brown. Almost black," said Muley, irritably. "I want to talk. I ain't talked to nobody. If I'm touched, I'm touched, and that's the end of it. Like old graveyard ghosts going to neighbors' houses in the night. Peters's, Jacob's, Rance's, Joe's, and the houses all dark, standing like miserable ratty boxes. There was good parties and dancing. And there was meetings, shouting glory. There was weddings in all them houses. And then I want to go into town and kill folks. 'Cause what they take when they tracked the folks off the land? What they get so their margin of profit was safe? They got Pa dying on the ground, and Joe yelling his fist breath, and me jerking like a billy goat under a bush in the night. What they get? God knows the land ain't no good. Nobody been able to make a crop for years. But them sons of bitches at their desks, they just chop folks in two for their margin profit. They just cut them in two. Place where folks live is them folks. They ain't whole, out lonely on the road piled up in a car. They ain't alive no more. Them sons of bitches kill them."
And he was silent, the thin lips still moving, the chest still panting. He sat and looked down at his hands in the firelight.
I ain't talked to nobody for a long time,"
he apologized softly.
"I've been sneaking round like an old graveyard ghost."
Casey pushed the long boards into the fire, and the flames licked up around them and leapt up towards the meat again. The house cracked loudly as the cooler night air contracted the wood. Casey said quietly, "I gotta see them folks that's gone out on the road. I got a feeling. I got to see them. They're gonna need help no preaching can give them. Hope of heaven when their lives ain't lived. Holy Spirit when their own spirit is downcast and sad. They're gonna need help. They gotta live before they can afford to die."
Jode cried nervously, "Jesus Christ, let's eat this meat before it's smaller than a cooked mouse. Look at her. Smell her."
He leaps to his feet and slid the pieces of meat along the wire until they were clear of the fire. He took Muley's knife and sawed through a piece of meat until it was free of the wire. "Here's for the preacher," he said.
"I told you, I ain't no preacher."
"Well, here's for the man, then." He cut off another piece. "Here, Muley, if you ain't too goddamn upset to eat. This here's Jackrabbit. Tougher than a bull bitch." He sat back and clamped his long teeth on the meat and tore out a great bite and chewed it. "Jesus Christ, hear a crunch." And he tore out another bite ravenously. Muley sat still, regarding his meat.
"Maybe I oughtn't to have talked like that," he said. Fella should maybe keep stuff like that in his head.
Casey looked over, his mouth full of rabbit. He chewed, and his muscled throat convulsed in swallowing.
Yes, you shouldn't talk, he said. Sometimes a sad man can talk the sadness right out through his mouth. Sometimes a killing man can talk the murder right out of his mouth and not do no murder. You done right. Don't you kill nobody if you can help it.
And he bit out another hunk of rabbit. Jodes tossed the bones into the fire, and jumped up and cut more meat off the wire. Muley was eating slowly now. His nervous little eyes went from one to the other of his companions. Jode ate, scowling like an animal, and a ring of grease formed around his mouth. For a long time, Muley looked at him, almost timidly. He put down the hand that held the meat.
Tame, he said.
Jode looked up, and did not stop gnawing the meat.
Yeah,
he said around a mouthful.
Tame, you ain't mad with me talking about killing people. You ain't huffy, Tom.
No, said Tom. I ain't huffy. It's just something that happened.
Everybody knowed it was no fault of yours, said Muley.
Old man Turnbull said he was going to get you when you come out. Says nobody can kill one of his boys. And all the folks hereabouts talked him out of it, though.
He was drunk, Jode said softly.
Drunk at a dance. I don't know how she started. And then I felt that knife go in me, and that sobered me up. First thing I see is Herb coming for me with his knife. There was this here shovel leaning against the schoolhouse, so I grabbed it, smacked him over the head. I never had nothing against Herb. He was a nice fella. Came bullying after my sister Rosa Sean when he was a little fella. No, I liked Herb. Well, everybody told his pa that and finally cooled him down. Somebody says they Hatfield's blood on his mother's side in old Turnbull, and he gotta live up to it. I don't know about that. Him and his folks went on to California 6 months ago.
Jode took the last of the rabbit from the wire and passed it around. He settled back and ate more slowly now, chewed evenly, and wiped the grease from his mouth with his sleeve. And his eyes, dark and half-closed, brooded as he looked into the dying fire.
Everybody's gone west, he said. I got me a parole to keep. I can't leave the state.
Parole?
Muley asked.
I heard about them. How they work?
Well, I got out early. 3 years early. They stuff I gotta do, or they send me back in. Got a rapport every so often.
How they treat you in McAllister? My woman's cousin was in McAllister, and they gave him hell.
It ain't so bad, said Jode. Like every place else. They give you hell if you raise hell. You get along okay, unless some guard gets it for you. Then you catch plenty of hell. I got along okay, minding my own business, like any guy would. I learned to write nice as hell. Birds and stuff like that too, not just word writing. My old man'll be sore when he sees me rip out a bird in one stroke. Pa's gonna be mad when he sees me do that. He don't like no fancy stuff like that. He don't even like the word writing. Kinda scares him, I guess. Every time Pa seen writing, somebody takes something away from him.
They didn't give you no beatings or nothing like that?
No, I just tended my own affairs. Of course, you get goddamn sick of doing the same thing day after day for 4 years. If you done something you ashamed of, you might think about that. But hell, if I seen Herb Turnbull come for me with a knife right now, I'd squash him with that shovel again.
Anybody would, said Muley.
The preacher stared into the fire, and his high forehead was white in the settling dark. The flash of little white flames picked out of the cords of his neck. His hands, clasped about his knees, were busy pulling knuckles. Jode threw the last bones into the fire and licked his fingers and wiped them on his pants. He stood up and brought the bottle of water from the porch, took a sparing drink and passed the bottle before he sat down again. He went on. The thing that gave most people trouble was it didn't make no sense. You don't look for no sense when lightning kills a cow, or it comes up a flood. It's just the way things is. But when a bunch of men take and lock you up 4 years, it ought to have some meaning. A man is supposed to think things out. Here they put me in, and keep me, and feed me for 4 years. They ought to make me think so I won't do her again, or else punish me so I'll be afraid to do her again. He paused. But
If Herb or anybody else come for me, I'd do her again. Do it before I could figure out. Especially if I was drunk. That sort of senselessness kind of worries a man.
Mealy observed.
Joe says he gave you a light sentence because it wasn't your fault.
Joe said, there's a guy in McAllister, a lifer. He studies all the time. He's secretary of the warden, writes warden's letters and stuff like that. Well, he's one hell of a bright guy, reads law and all stuff like that. Well, I talked to him one time about her, because he reads so much stuff. And he says, don't do no good to read books. He says, read everything about prisons now, in the old times. And he says, makes less sense to him now than it did before he started reading. He says, it's a thing that started way to hell and gone back, and nobody seems to be able to stop her, and nobody's got sense enough to change her. He says, for God's sake, don't read about her, because he says, for one thing, you just get messed up worse, and for another, you won't have no respect for the guys that work governments.
I ain't got a hell of a lot of respect for him now, said Muley. Only kind of government that leans on us fellas is the safe margin of profit.
There's one thing that got me stumped, and that's Willie Freely driving a cat, and gonna be a straw boss on land his folks used to farm. That worries me. I can see how a fella might come from another place and not know better, but Willie belongs. Worried me, so I went up to him and asked him. Right off he got mad. I got two little kids, he says. I got a wife and my wife's mother, and people gotta eat. Gets madder than hell. First and only thing I think about is my own folks, he says. What happens to other folks is their lookout, he says. Seems like he's shamed, so he gets mad.
Jim Casey had been staring at the dying fire, and his eyes had grown wider, and his neck muscles stood tighter. Suddenly, he cried,
I got her! If a man ever got a dose of the spirit, I got her! Got her all of a flash!
He jumped to his feet and paced back and forth, head swinging.
Had a tent one time. Drawed as much as 500 people every night. That's before either you fellas seen me.
He stopped and faced them.
Ever notice I took no collections when I was preaching out here to folks, in barns and in open? By God, you never, said Muley. People around here got so used to not giving you money that they got to being a little mad when some other preacher come along and passed the hat. Yes, sir.
I took some to eat, said Casey. I took a pair of pants when mine was wore out, and an old pair of shoes when I was walking through the ground. But it wasn't light when I had the tent. Some days there, I'd taken $20. Wasn't happy that way, so I gave her up, and for a time, I was happy. I think I got her now. I don't know if I can say her. I guess I won't try to say her. But maybe there's a place for a preacher. Maybe I can preach again. Folks out lonely on the roads. Folks with no land, no home to go to. I gotta have some kind of home. Maybe.
He stood over the fire. The 100 muscles of his neck stood out in high relief, and the firelight went deep into his eyes and ignited red embers. He stood and looked at the fire, his face tense as though he were listening, and the hands that had been active to pick, to handle, to throw ideas, grew quiet, and in a moment crept into his pockets. The bats flitted in and out of the dull firelight, and the soft, watery burble of a nighthawk came from across the fields. Tom reached quietly into his pocket and brought out his tobacco, and he rolled a cigarette, slowly, and looked over it at the coals while he worked. He ignored the whole speech of the preacher, as though it was some private thing that should not be inspected. He said, "Night after night in my bunk, I figured how she'd be when I come home again. I figured maybe Grandma or Grandpa be dead. Maybe there'd be some new kids. Maybe Pa'd not be so tough. Maybe Ma'd set back a little and let Rosa Shawn do the work. I knowed it wouldn't be the same as it was. Well, we'll sleep here, I guess, and come daylight, we'll get on to Uncle John's. Leastwise, I will. You think you're coming along, Casey?" The preacher stood still, looking into the coals. He said slowly,
"Yeah, I'm going with you. And when your folks start out on the road, I'm going to be with them."
"You're welcome," said Jude. "Ma always favored you. Said you was a preacher of trust. Rosa Shawn wasn't growed up then."
He turned his head. "Muley, You gonna walk on over with us?
Muley was looking toward the road over which they had come.
Think you'll come along, Muley? Jade repeated.
Huh? No, I don't go no place. I don't leave no place. See that glow over there, jerking up and down? That's probably superintendent of this stretch cotton. Somebody may be seeing our fire.
Tom looked. The glow of the light was nearing over the hill.
We ain't doing no harm, he said. We just sit here. We ain't doing nothing.
Muley cackled. Yeah, we done something just being here. We trespassing. We can't stay. They've been trying to catch me for 2 months. Now you look. If that's a car coming, we gotta go out in the cotton, lay down. Don't have to go far. Then by God, let them try and find us. Have to look up and down every row. Just keep your head down.
Joe demanded, what's come over you, Muley? You wasn't never no run and hide fella. You was mean.
Muley watched the approaching lights.
Yeah, he said. I was mean like a wolf. Now I'm mean like a weasel. When you're hunting something, you're a hunter. And you're strong. Can't nobody beat a hunter. But when you get hunted, that's different. Something happens to you. You ain't strong. Maybe you're fierce, but you ain't strong. I've been hunted now for a long time. I ain't a hunter no more. Maybe I'd shoot a feller in the dark, but I don't maul nobody with a fence stake no more. It don't do no good to fool you or me. That's how it is.
Well, you go out and hide, said Jode. Leave me and Casey to tell these bastards a few things.
The beam of light was closer now, and it bounced into the sky, and then disappeared, and bounced up again. All three men watched.
Muley said, there's one more thing about being hunted. You get to thinking about all the dangerous things. If you're hunting, you don't think about them, and you ain't scared. Like you says to me, if you get in any more trouble, they'll send you back to McAllister to finish your time.
That's right, said Jode. That's what they told me. But sitting here resting or sleeping on the ground, that ain't getting in no trouble. That ain't doing nothing wrong. That ain't like getting drunk or raising hell.
Muley laughed. You'll see. You just sit here and the car will come. Maybe it's Willie Freely. And Willie's a deputy sheriff now. What are you doing trespassing here? Willie says. Well, you always did know Willie was full of crap. So you says, what's it to you? And Willie gets mad. You get off or I'll take you in. And you ain't gonna let Freely push you around because he's mad and scared. He made a bluff and he gotta go on with it. And here's you getting tough and you gotta go through. Ugh, hell, it's a lot easier to lay in the cotton and let them look. It's more fun too because they mad and can't do nothing. And you're out here laughing at them. But you just talk to Willie or any boss and slug hell out of them and they'll take you in. And run you back to McAllister for 3 years.
You're talking sense, said Jode. Every word you said is sense, but Jesus, I hate to get pushed around. I'd lots rather take a stock at Willie.
He's got a gun, said Muley. He'll use it because he's a deputy. Then he either got to kill you, or you got to get his gun away and kill him. Come on, Tommy. You can easily tell yourself you're fooling him lying out like that. And it all just amounts to what you tell yourself.
The strong lights angled up in the sky now, and even the drone of a motor could be heard.
Come on, Tommy. Don't have to go far. Just 14-15 rows over, and we can watch what they do.
Tom got to his feet.
By God, you're right, he said. I ain't got a thing in the world to win, no matter how it comes out.
Come on, then, this way.
Muley moved around the house and out to the cotton field about 50 yards.
This is good, he said. Now, lay down. You only gotta pull your head down if they start the spotlight going. It's kind of fun.
The three men stretched out at full length and propped themselves on their elbows. Muley sprang up and ran towards the house, and in a few moments he came back and threw a bundle of coats and shoes down.
They'd have taken them along just to get even, he said.
The lights topped the rise and bore down on the house.
Jode asked, won't they come out here with flashlights and look around for us? I wished I had a stick.
Muley giggled.
No, they won't. I told you, I'm mean like a weasel. Willie done that one night, and I clipped him from behind with a fence stake, knocked him cold in a wedge. He told later how 5 guys come at him.
The car dropped to the house, and a spotlight snapped on.
Duck, said Muley.
And the bar of cold white light sprung over their heads and crisscrossed the field. The hiding men could not see any movement, but they heard a car door slam, and they heard voices.
Scared to get in the light, Muley whispered. Once, twice, I took a shot at the headlights. That keeps Willie careful. He got somebody with him tonight.
They heard footsteps on the wood, and then, from inside the house, they saw the glow of a flashlight.
Shall I shoot through the house? Muley whispered. They couldn't see where it comes from. Give them something to think about.
Sure, go ahead, said Jode.
Don't do it, Casey whispered. It won't do no good, just a waste. We gotta get thinking about doing stuff that means something.
A scratching sound came from near the house.
Putting out the fire, Muley whispered. Kicking dust over it.
The car door slammed. The headlights swung around and faced the road again.
Now duck,
Muley said, and they dropped their heads and the spotlight swept over them and recrossed the cotton field. And then the car started and slipped away and topped the rise and disappeared. Muley sat up.
Willie always tries that last flash. He done it so often I can time him. He still thinks it's cute.
Casey said, maybe they left some fellas in the house. They'd catch us when we come back.
Maybe. You fellas wait here. I know this game.
He walked quietly away, and only a slight crunching of clods could be heard from his passage. The two waiting men tried to hear him, but he had gone. In a moment, he called back from the house.
I didn't leave nobody. Come on back.
Casey and Jode struggled up and walked back towards the black bulk of the house. Muley met them near the smoking dust pile which had been their fire.
I didn't think they'd leave nobody, he said proudly. Me knocking Willie over and taking a shot at the lights once keeps them careful. They ain't sure who it is and I ain't gonna let them catch me. I don't sleep near no house. If you fellas won't come along, I'll show you where to sleep. Where there ain't nobody gonna stumble over you.
Laid off, said Jode. We'll follow you. I never thought I'd be hiding out in my old man's place.
Muley set off across the fields, and Jode and Casey followed him. They kicked the cotton plants as they went.
You'll be hiding from lots of stuff, said Muley.
They marched in single file across the fields. They came to a water cut and slid easily down to the bottom of it.
By God, I bet I know, cried Jode. Is it a cave in the bank? That's right. How'd you know?
I dug her, said Jode. Me and my older brother Noah dug her. Looking for gold, we says we was, but we was just digging caves like kids always does.
The walls of the water cut were above their heads now.
Ought to be pretty close, said Jode. Seems to me I remember her pretty close.
Muley said, I've covered her with brush. Nobody couldn't find her.
The bottom of the gulch leveled off, and the footing was sand. Jode settled himself on the clean sand.
I ain't gonna sleep in no cave, he said. I'm gonna sleep right here.
He rolled his coat and put it under his head. Muley pulled at the covering bush and crawled into his cave.
I like it in here, he called. I feel like nobody can come at me.
Jim Casey sat down on the sand beside Jode.
Get some sleep, said Jode. We'll start for Uncle John's at daybreak.
I ain't sleeping, said Casey. I got too much to puzzle with.
He drew up his feet and clasped his legs. He threw back his head and looked up at the sharp stars. Jode yawned and brought one hand back under his head. They were silent, and gradually the skittering life of the ground, of holes and burrows, of the brush, began again. The gophers moved, and the rabbits crept to green things. The mice scampered over clods, and the winged hunters moved soundlessly overhead.
Thank you so very much for listening. If you enjoyed, please leave a review. And if you really want to support me, share this chapter with your friends, family, and whoever you feel would enjoy it. And if you really wish to support me, head to my Patreon. The link is in the episode notes. If you choose to follow the podcast, you'll have 3 new chapters per week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Once again, I thank you for listening. And until next time, bye-bye.